The Sattler Files.
Welcome to The Sattler Files. This is Murray Korf, and we're into the relationship files, and with me is Keith Flynn. Welcome, Keith.
G'day, Murray. How are you going?
Very well, thank you. Look, often men don't want to talk about relationship problems, do they?
It has been a bit of a challenge.
And why is that? Why is it that us guys don't like, is it because we feel as though it's a mushy subject?
Look, well, let me just talk a little bit about myself.
Yep.
And I remember when I was married and I was, I guess I came from the old school. I felt my role, my job was to provide for the family. And I really wasn't coping well at home. So the easiest escape for me was to get out and work. I'd work overtime and long hours. And I was working really, really hard to own our own home in a beachside suburb of Hampton in Victoria. What I neglected to do was be there for the family.
Right.
And for me, I guess I just modeled my father. You know, he was grew up on a farm and mm-hmm. he'd just get out there and work and do his things and really sort of wasn't contributing to the home. And I just modeled that and I thought everything was fine. So I think part of the story depends on our upbringing is that a lot of men aren't educated in terms of what it means to emotionally support or support the wife or support the family.
Mm. I was going to mention that. I mean, is it that they are unable to express their emotions properly without feeling as though they're making themselves vulnerable?
Yeah, it's a bit of a generalisation. Mm-hmm. I think men generally are less able to express their emotions. Of course, you have some men that really do express their emotions, and like one of the models that I use is that you have heart-centred people and you have head-centred, and that applies to men and women. Mm-hmm. And generally, the heart-centred people are the ones that are very expressive.
Okay,
and they let you know where you stand. The head-centered one, they tend to go a bit inside.
Mm.
I think also with men that, and again, I'll just speak from my own experience, we tend to approach life a little bit differently. Like women tend to get in groups and discuss things. Men tend to go out and do things on their own and give a bloke a job to fix, and you'll get out there and get the tools out and fix it.
Sure. That's right. That's what we do.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But they don't have the tools to fix a relationship, even if they know that there's something wrong with it.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah, look, I would recount 50 stories just in and people that I know that didn't see it coming.
Yeah,
that's such a common thing to hear, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, like in the experience, like working with women drop hints all the time. But sometimes they're a bit too subtle for us blokes.
That's right. We need to be hit over the head with it sometimes.
Exactly.
And once again, speaking from my own experience, like you have just a moment ago, I can't cope with hints. It's got to be spelled out to me, you know. And I've often said to my wife, you know, I don't see things. You need to look me in the eye and say, that needs doing, or you are doing this or not doing that, or whatever. Don't hint.
Yeah.
Come out and say it.
Exactly.
And in plain English, without emotion, and it'll likely be very well received.
Yeah. Well, I had one classic with one of my clients, and she said that her husband asked her what she wanted for her birthday. Mm-hmm. And she said, I just need a nice little watch and, you know, nothing fancy.
Mm.
So what does he go out and do? He goes and buys her this most expensive watch ever. And
that really was not what she wanted.
That was not what she wanted.
Yeah.
You know, she just wanted something nice and simple, not something fancy and expensive.
The other thing that applies in lots of cases to women, I mean, we talked about hints and that sort of stuff. I've had it said to me that, you know, you should know what I want. You should be able to choose something yourself and make it, you know, from you without me having to tell you. Is that fair?
Look, from a guy's point of view, you know, I've been faced with that one. Personally, I suck. I suck at getting presents for women.
Yeah.
But what I have learned to do is really, really listen.
Mm.
And sometimes just ask and then file things away.
Mm.
You know, if generally my partner, if, you know, if there's something there that she really likes,
mm.
you know, so you can get brownie points by just listening and putting it in the diary and mm. and bringing out at some later date.
A lot of hard work there, Keith.
It is. It's hard work, but hey, at the end of the day, it's worth it.
Yeah, I take your point. We joke about it a lot, but that's quite true.
Yeah.
One of the no-nos that I've come across, I actually got my sister to help me once with something, and that was not seen as a cool thing to do either. It was like, yeah, okay, so you made the effort to do it, but couldn't you have done it without help, you know, without having to consult someone else? You know, it was my sister, for goodness sake, you know, someone that I trust and often will confide in, but no, that wasn't good enough either. I mean, the bar gets set pretty high sometimes with these things, don't you think?
Sometimes. Mm. I guess one of the observations that I have made is that women really just want their men to think of them.
Yes. Yeah.
And
so in choosing a present on your own, that is symbolic of focusing your entire attention on her need or want.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's really sometimes very hard for a lot of people, a lot of blokes, to get their head around.
It is. So again, one of the things that I use is there's a great book out there called The Five Love Languages by Dr. Gary Chapman. Mm-hmm. And what that simply says, what he found with his working with people, is that generally there's people have two or three, probably two main love languages, and it's really answering the question, how do you know I love you?
Right.
Or how do you know that I'm loved?
Mm.
And so there's words of affirmation. So it's like I love you or compliments. There's physical touch. Doesn't have to be sexual, but you know, hugs. Tugs, I was going to say tugs, but that doesn't.
Perhaps not.
That might work.
It'd work for me.
You've got acts of service.
Mm-hmm.
You've got quality time, and you've got gifts. So generally, two of those rate higher. So if you can work out what two are important to your partner, then you can sort of focus in that area. So it sort of narrows it down a bit.
Mm.
So, for example, if one partner is words of affirmation, those magic words, I love you, can mean a lot.
Mm.
And if that is not your natural love language, and a lot of guys have trouble saying, I love you, but if they don't, and you might get the situation where one partner is saying, you never say I love you. And the bloke goes, well, look, I'm doing all these things for you. I'm putting out the rubbish bin, yada, yada, yada. Well, his is acts of service. That's why he's showing his love. He's saying, I love you because I do all these things for you.
Mm.
But all she wants to hear is, I love you.
Yeah.
Now, if you understand that, what you do is you go out and buy her a card, and you write these words, I love you, and give her the card.
Mm.
And then she can open up this card multiple times a day.
And it can be said to her as often as she does it.
Exactly.
Mm. Mm.
So understanding how someone feels they're loved can actually, like, cut out that hit and that miss that sometimes we're in for.
Mm. And, of course, a lot of guys, because we are fix-it type people, as you alluded to earlier, believe that if there's something wrong with their relationship, if they actually acknowledge that or recognise that, they believe they can fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do they do? Well, I mean, what are some of the things that they would do that perhaps really women don't doesn't gel with women? I mean, maybe increase the number of times I take the garbage out or something of that, ilk. I mean, it's got to be said in, I guess, or demonstrated in a way that that women understand and women accept and women feel is genuine, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, if it is like put out the rubbish, well, you only do that once or twice a week.
Yeah, that's right. So, you're struggling a bit after that, aren't you?
Exactly. So sometimes men take things a little bit too literally.
Mm.
And that's where really it does come back to that point, understanding and listening and prep. Yeah, if you understand the love languages. And then, I mean, I'll give you one example. Another one of my clients, quality time was really important to her.
Mm-hmm.
And quality time wasn't getting in the car and going for a drive somewhere with him on the mobile phone.
No.
That was not quality time.
Even I can see that, yeah.
And when I said to her, so quality time would mean to you going down to the beach, going for a walk hand in hand and leaving the mobile phones behind, her eyes lit up. So one of the things that they had, they'd been married for over 30 years, one of the things that they weren't doing is date night. So quality time, if you put date night into their schedule, now – they put date night in, so what he would do is he'd book a restaurant and book a movie, and it became a little bit rushed, but at least they had created that time together. It was something to work with.
Yeah. And once again, you don't want any distraction in that particular activity, do you? You don't want to be taking your mobile phone with you just in case or that sort of thing. Well, you've really got to focus on your partner when you do
exactly.
a date night, don't you?
So he needed a bit of education. So it was an interesting exercise in sort of knowing what was required, like the date night, but then supporting her to keep the boundary.
Right.
Because it meant he had to change.
Okay.
But just to show it's possible, like he was in his late 50s, and it came to the point where he tried to push it, you know, something would come up, something a bit more shiny would come up, he'd try and... Mm-hmm. do the shiny thing, and she put her foot down. And it did get to the point after a couple of months where if anyone did ring up about date night, he would say, absolutely, look, I've got a date night with my wife.
Mm.
So,
and I guess that saying that, knocking back some other activity or that would reaffirm and reinforce the fact that he was focusing on her needs and her desire to have quality time. Yeah. He was actually acknowledging that by doing that, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, just imagine how she felt.
Oh, she would have been absolutely delighted, I would have thought.
Exactly, because he was speaking her language and simply said, you are more important.
Yeah.
You're more important. I will actually knock back that just for you because you are so important to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, we need a few more of those, don't we? But often... the guys don't see it coming. They don't believe that there's anything wrong.
No.
And despite the hints and despite the anything else, they believe that everything is going along really well.
Exactly.
And the guy thinks, as you alluded to earlier, that by going out and earning a good living and making everybody comfortable at home, that he's fulfilling his part of the relationship.
Yeah.
When in fact, not necessarily so.
Not necessarily so.
Yeah. She's going to want more. Not necessarily more,
no.
But perhaps a different demonstration of his commitment?
I'm not sure if it would be considered commitment. I think it's understanding.
Okay.
Like for a bloke out working, you know, on the job, earning the money, and if she's at home with the kids and the rest of it, I mean, she's got a full day. Kids are tiring. And then... but he's able to get out and do his own thing on his own and then, you know, taking her for granted and not really being part of that.
Yeah.
And I mean, for example, I had a little incident recently with my partner where she was actually on a holiday in Bali and her foot got infected. And I received this email back saying, I need emotional support. And I'm going and I'm thinking to myself, well, that's great for you to say. But I can't do anything. I'm here. I can't come over there and hug you or, you know. To me, emotional support was hugging, talking, holding, nurturing.
Yeah.
And to her, it meant something completely different.
Mm.
I'm sort of sitting there, well, and that's what I replied back, and that reply didn't go down too well.
Mm. Yes. So what do you do in a situation like that? She says she wants emotional support. You're 3,000 or 4,000 kilometres away from her. How do you provide that?
Well, the answer was very simple about a week later.
Okay.
I asked her what emotional support did you want? And she said, well, look, just a nice text or an email would have been great.
Mm.
So sometimes we don't actually just ask the simple question, you know, from a heart and say, honey, look, I don't understand what you actually mean, but what do you actually mean? Give me an example.
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because sometimes you can pick up a hint.
Yeah.
My wife does a very definite thing if I come to sit and talk with her about something, and she's either reading a book or a magazine or maybe on Facebook or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. What she does is she closes the book or puts the phone down or the iPad or whatever it is and looks at me.
Yeah.
And then I know that I have her absolutely undivided attention and she's interested in what I'm about to say. So I've actually picked up on that. So when she does the reverse to me, what I do is put the book down, close the book or close the iPad or whatever it is, and I look at her.
Yeah.
And that's never been discussed. That's never been sort of agreed to, but it's something that we do.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a, from my perspective, I learned a lot from that, because what that said to me was she was prepared to listen to something that I had to say, whether it was going to, she wasn't going to like it or whatever, but she was prepared to listen and discuss, and nothing else was going to divert her attention from that.
Yeah.
So I respond in kind.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I've got a workshop coming up on, one of the workshops I do. One of the exercises I do is like with the talking stick, and I think I might have mentioned it last time.
You did.
And what you've just illustrated, Murray, is that exact example where it's an agreement between you that, okay, this is our time to communicate, and I will listen, I'll look you in the eye, and it gives us a chance to communicate.
Mm.
And my partner actually, when we've talked and I've sort of like closed my eyes to go inside, she says, look, you need to look at me. Because when we look at people through our eyes, we're actually soul to soul. We're actually connecting at at another level.
Mm. Yeah. Do guys deny often that there's something wrong, even though it's plain as the nose on their face that there is? But do they sort of deny it? And why do they do that if they can actually see it?
I think I'd approach that from two angles. One of the things I'm really big on is that we model our relationships from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if parents are in conflict a lot, then their norm could be, what's normal in a relationship could be that people are in conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And often, you know, I don't know if it's happened to you, but, you know, you have the big fight and the makeup sex is great afterwards type of thing. So some people run their relationships like that.
Mm.
It's a chance to clear the air and then reconnect.
Mm.
So for some people, if that is a norm, then they expect conflict.
Mm.
But that may not be the norm for their partner.
Mm. Okay.
And that's when the problem occurs.
Yeah.
Another one is, for me anyway, it's when I was younger and in my marriage, it was easier for me to avoid. It was easier for me to work back, to deny that something was wrong. And I think men, some men can have that bit of a challenge just to avoid it, because I don't know about you, but sometimes, well, my wife, I reckon her second career should have been a lawyer.
Right. I know where you're going with this.
You know, it no matter what I said, I couldn't get away with anything.
No.
And then all of a sudden, you know, that record, that filing system that some women have that can remember everything.
It's in their DNA, mate.
Yeah, you know, they bring it up. Now, so sometimes I was to the point, well, I really don't want to face that, because I'm going to be in a no-win situation.
And yep, I understand that one. I really do, and I've experienced it. And it's, I've heard it expressed as a frustration where, when you are in conflict and you try and resolve it, you come away feeling as though you've lost and you were wrong and you were, you know, not listened to and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Is that something that men often feel or often, what can I verbalize?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think when I mentioned last time when I was talking about the talking stick episode in King's Park.
Mm.
And women do it as well. Often we'll feel attacked. if we're taking it personally, we can feel attacked, and the other person can feel very strongly, and then so that's when we start to feel the right and wrong.
Mm.
It's not like detaching and saying, well, look, I guess it's the example if you have, you know, three or four blind men describing an elephant. Mm. You know, it's the same elephant, but they describe it in different ways.
Sure.
It's not actually just sitting back and being objective and saying, hey, well, this is what happened. Now, I shared last time when my partner said, you know, yes, boss, mm. I took it one way, she meant it another.
Yeah.
So I was defending, she was defending. But when we can actually step back, and a little bit like what you're saying with your wife,
mm.
when you sit down, close the books, and you're just present with each other, you're open to listen mm. and actually hear the other person
mm.
and honor them. And I think that's part of the reason why women bring up this list of things is because they haven't been honored. They haven't actually felt that we've actually understood their grievance.
And so, yeah, so it's unresolved for them.
It's unresolved for them. So yep. Any chance that comes up, they bring it out.
So in denying that there is a problem mm. with men in particular, because I don't think women do that, do they? They're more open to acknowledging that a problem exists in a relationship. That's right. Than yeah, perhaps
and we are the problem.
And most of the time we are the problem. I say it all the time. But do men use the avoidance technique because the whole thing is too hard and they hope that it will go away?
I think that's part of the story, yeah.
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 Or is it because maybe they don't feel as though they can express themselves all that well?
Well, I think for me anyway, back then it was that I didn't actually have the confidence.
Okay.
I didn't know how to express it. I didn't know how to elevate it to that level where we could be objective and not be emotionally involved.
Mm-hmm. Do you think men in some ways feel that by expressing emotions that they are in some way perhaps not a man?
I think that's part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I can remember way back when I was young, and that was back before electricity, I think. I was always told, boys don't cry.
Mm.
So that was the signal to suppress your emotions and, suck it up and
yeah.
get on with it.
Yeah.
And, a lot of men would probably have been taught that in their childhood, and so they carry it to adulthood, and that's really not a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
Mm.
I mean, I think when I was growing up, there was a term that came out, which was SNAG, sensitive new age guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an old one, I know.
Goodness me.
Yeah. And then you get like, well, what is a man nowadays?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he supposed to be someone sensitive and cry, or is he supposed to be strong?
Yeah.
Is he supposed to be a knight in shining armor?
Yep.
Because again, I know working in some relationships, another couple that I was working with, the guy was actually a blubbering mess.
Mm.
And the woman was like, well, man up. Mm. I want someone who's strong. So it for some people, it can be a little bit of a challenge actually to find that right balance.
Yes. Yeah, of course. And I mean, part of the whole issue might be that men don't have the communication skills. I mean, it is a learned thing in lots of ways in a relationship, is it not?
Absolutely.
Mm.
Absolutely.
So one size doesn't always fit all.
No. And, again, we've got so many factors like our parents, our upbringing. Even culture plays a big part in it. Mm. And really, it's also the people that we model around us. And so it tends to be, people's beliefs, the way they act and react. We tend to look at that and model that when we're younger.
Yeah, and carry it on into adulthood.
And carry it on. And we effectively practice it every day,
mm-hmm.
if you think about it.
Yeah, I guess we do. Yeah. I guess we do. So when people in the first flush of a relationship, and even when you first get married and that sort of stuff, communication doesn't seem to be a problem, does it?
No.
What happens?
Well, when people first get together, I use the analogy that they are looking for everything that's the same. They're in a honeymoon phase. Mm. They say love is blind.
Mm.
Well, people are blinded in that early stages. Mm. So everything's wonderful. And then comes the point when things start to settle down and people start to notice differences.
Mm. That cute little habit becomes an absolute annoyance.
Yeah. And if you think about it, when people, you know, when they first get together, they generally don't start living together straight away.
No.
So it's always new and it's always fresh and you can't wait to see the person. Then when you start living with them 24/7, completely different story.
Of course it is. You get the dirty socks and the dishes left in the sink and all of that sort of nonsense.
And the other thing is when people get together for the first time, generally you're on your best behaviour.
That's so true, isn't it? It's almost like false advertising, isn't it?
And, you know, I talked about the five love languages. Well,
you did.
We like get the shotgun out there, you know.
Yeah.
We're telling them nice things. We're complimenting them. We're giving them gifts. We're, you know, opening the door. We're doing things for them. Mm. There's a lot of touching and hugging and the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then when it settles down, we revert back to our normal state.
That's right.
And they go, what the?
Yeah, what happened?
What happened?
Yes. So, I mean, it does get back to the communication, obviously.
Yeah.
Diminishes over a period of time until it reaches a point. Now, obviously, is it a slow build where sometimes it is just something that happens over a period of time and you reach a point where all of a sudden it becomes just so impossible to tolerate anymore.
Yeah.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a slow build.
Yeah.
You know, because you go through the honeymoon phase and then things settle down and then, you know, there's still that commitment. We had our dreams and generally one partner's hanging on to the relationship more than the other.
Mm.
And then it gets to a point, the next phase is like trauma and that's where you notice differences. I heard of one really, really sad case, and this was a woman who had been married for, I think, like about nearly 40 years, 30, 35, 40 years.
Mm.
And she was 60, and I don't think she and her husband had made love for like 10 years, sleeping in the same bed, and she was planning to leave him when she was 65.
Really? Why was 65 significant?
Obviously retirement or something,
okay,
for some reason, you know, the marriage had died, but she was still hanging on, but she just set in her mind 65 and... It's crazy.
Did she think to actually tell him that was what was going to happen?
He probably didn't know.
No, probably didn't see it at all.
Yeah.
And obviously when things get to that point where attempts are made at communication to communicate a problem or to resolve a situation, and I have experienced this, where you feel cornered. You know, you feel as though you've got nowhere to go, you're not being heard, and... It seems like it's out of control.
Yeah.
You know, you have no influence over the outcome of either the argument or whether she's going to go or whether whatever it is, but you just feel cornered. You know?
Cornered, trapped.
Yep.
And what happens when we're cornered and trapped?
Fight or flight.
Exactly.
Mm.
And most people, and that's the thing, when we feel cornered and trapped, we are literally... in that state of fight or flight. We either want to run and get out of there or we get angry, upset, and we're like defending ourselves.
Mm, yeah. And, of course, we've also brought up the – and this is something that I hear so often about bringing up all the old stuff, the laundry list of complaints that are trotted out every time that there's a difference of opinion. Instead of focusing on the argument at hand
– yeah.
Is that point scoring, or is it really that it's unresolved and the woman is trying to get everything resolved in one fell swoop?
I believe it's the woman trying. The woman has found an opening.
Oh, right. A chink.
A chink. She's got the attention of her man.
Right.
And so she's out to make the most of it.
Okay.
And in the way I work with people, I believe everybody is right. The man is right, the woman is right, except they just don't understand each other's world.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman might simply be saying, well, like you said, these are unresolved. I really would like to put these out and put these to bed, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But what she does is she overloads the man, everything comes out, and it just keeps that cycle. And she doesn't feel that anything is resolved.
No, and in that action can be very overwhelming for a man to, exactly. to have that all run out because, you know, because I don't know that we're all that bright as a species. And so we're faced with this overwhelming list of things that we've apparently done wrong. And in lots of cases, you know, it's really, is that what I did? Or, you know, because we tend to move on fairly quickly.
Yeah.
As males, do you think?
Yeah, yeah. I think you made a comment when we were talking earlier. It's like you brought out the list, and I don't even remember doing that type yes. of thing.
That's so true.
so but, true. But here's another one. I've just thought about. Look, you know how we said men like to fix things.
Yeah.
Well, if I said to you, look, there's a problem with the kitchen sink.
Yep.
All right, you get your tools and go and fix it, right?
Yep.
If I suddenly said, here's a list of 50 things I want fixed in the next 2 minutes.
yeah, you'd probably fall down and, you know,
yeah.
assume the fetal position.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the situation a lot of men get in. It's like, yeah. well, I'm here to fix it, but man, you've just given me 50 things to fix.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
I don't know where to start.
And, of course, well, you talked about it earlier that that men – often see their role as that of the provider,
yeah.
the hunter-gatherer, as it were.
Provider, protector.
And they really think that that's the only thing that you have to do is to be a good provider and a good protector. And a lot of us have learned to our chagrin that that really isn't the only thing that needs to be part of a relationship or is important in a relationship.
Correct, correct.
Yeah. So... How do we? Is there a balance you can put into it? I mean, if you're young and you've got a job, or you might have two, maybe even three jobs that you're working, how doesn't a guy need some emotional support and some recognition for his effort as well?
Absolutely.
Mm.
And I think that's where. Again, like I come from a farm, so it's like grassroots. It's like if we have things established, and if I just simply go back with my partner and myself, we have a date night once a week, guaranteed.
Mm.
It is sacrosanct. In fact, it's so sacrosanct. She's away in Bali at the moment. She made sure she got two in last week.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Her logic was, well, I'm not going to get one next week, so let's get two in this week.
Well, you know, that logic kind of works for me if you're really committed.
Yeah, absolutely.
That kind of works, doesn't
it? Yeah,
yeah.
And she also mentioned, like, we might have some issues come up, and I said, well, if we have issues come up, we deal with them separately.
Mm.
You know, we don't make date night issue night.
Interesting. So that's not what it's about. It's about communicating and, you know, just being together and in a non-hostile environment.
Exactly. Doing things that we enjoy together, whether it be a picnic, go to the movies, sit down and watch TV, listen to some music, go dancing, whatever, just something we do together.
Without any other distraction.
Yeah, without any other distraction. It's our time together.
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting that you say that because even if it's listening to music together or maybe a movie, you're not actually if you're listening to music, you're not necessarily talking to each other, or if you're at a movie, you're not necessarily talking to each other either, are you? So it's the togetherness thing. It's the actual commitment to do it.
Yeah.
That sends the message that I'm committed to you and, you know, I love you and this is what we do together.
Yeah, and what I've sort of found, it's that the time that we set aside for ourselves is the important thing.
Yeah.
It's saying the message that you are important enough for me that I will set aside everything else so that we spend this time together.
Mm.
And it might be 1 week you choose something, 1 week I choose something, whatever. But it's really just saying the relationship's important, that it needs nurturing.
Mm.
And we do that at least minimum once a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might be for an hour or two or three, but we're creating that space. We're not just letting life come and take over.
Mm. So important.
Mm.
Keith, it's been absolutely stimulating for me. I think it's a great discussion and some very good points there. And thank you so much for joining us. But you've got a seminar coming up, haven't you? A workshop.
Got a workshop coming up, yes. It's
what are the details of that?
It's coming up this Monday, 21st, from 7 till 8 p.m. in South Perth Library. And we will be focusing on, it's called an Introductory Relationship Seminar. And I'll be covering some secrets on how to transform your relationship.
I think I should go. They can contact you on your mobile number, which is 0418 101 902. And they can also go to your website, www.keithflynn.com.au. And if they don't remember all of that, they can contact us here at the Sattler Files and we'll pass on the information to them.
Sensational.
Keith, thank you so much for coming in today. And we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Looking forward to it, Murray.
More on the Sattler Files very shortly.
This is the Sattler Files.